Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Today is Wednesday, so we start out with news for the walnut industry. The Tree Nut Conference is 1 week from today in Tulare. Taylor Chalstrom kicks off the show today with a preview.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board.
Hi, this is Taylor with My Ag Life. We're here today with Abby Welch, an entomologist and PCA with Semios. Abby will be leading an industry-sponsored talk at the California Tree Nut Conference next month on November 3rd in Tulare. And she'll be talking about new technology for monitoring and managing insect pests in nut crops. Abby, can you give us a little bit of a general overview about what you'll be discussing in that talk?
Yeah, so this talk is going to highlight the role that technology can play in pest, disease, and crop management in a seasonal format. So what I mean by that is that we know that technology can be utilized throughout every season of the year by the insights that it can provide in the right format through integrations with compatible softwares.
Why do you think, and why does, you know, even Semios think that this information is going to be important to the growers and consultants that will be attending the conference this year?
Yeah, I think we want to highlight why data all in one place matters and can help you inform those decisions if you're able to have an overall view of what's happening on your farm and can kind of get a sense of every piece of information on that piece of land that's what's happening. And so we just want to start kind of getting that out there and helping people understand how to use that and utilize that to the best of what they need to get done.
And when you're saying data all in one place, are you kind of referring to maybe a cloud format of data, or what are you more specifically referring to there?
Well, we do have a cloud, but we actually do have a platform that users can log into and get a view of pests and diseases as well as irrigation, what the crop is doing phenology wise. So there are a lot of different pieces on there, and the integrations that we have now deployed on the site are also what we want to highlight in the sense that data all in one place now with these partnerships that we've made can really make a difference in the way that you record and track the things happening out there.
You know, when you talk about these differences, is this like kind of streamlining the process in general or just making it more easy to understand for the grower? You know, what is your guys' goal there for making that difference?
I think it's both. I think it's both streamlining it, making it easier so that you can see trap images on one place and you don't have to go out and check every individual trap. And so we also deploy a lot of graphs and visualizations for you to digest that data as well as manipulate it to make it work for you. So if you have biofixes for pests and you have different varieties of trees out there, those things are all you're all able to customize those things. And so it makes it easy to view it in the way that you choose to view it.
Well, thank you, Abby, for coming on today and giving us a little preview about what you'll be discussing at the Tree Nut Conference. For anyone that's listening, you're not going to want to miss this talk or any of the other talks that we have on pest management, irrigation, other various topics. Abby, we look forward to seeing you there in person on November 3rd.
I'm looking forward to it as well.
We're here with Christy Sanchez, senior researcher and nematologist for Tri-Cal Diagnostics. Christy is going to be heading one of our talks at this year's California Tree Nut Conference on November 3rd in Tulare. She'll be talking about nematode management in California tree nut crops. Christy, can you give us a little more info about specifically what your presentation at this conference will be about?
Yes. So I will provide like an overview of key plant parasitic nematodes that impact tree nut crops, how to diagnose a nematode problem in a field where you can observe root symptoms and foliar. But this leads into the importance of soil and root soil sampling to making key management decisions. I'll also discuss nematology research we are conducting at Tri-Cal Diagnostics and Tri-Cal. The importance of soil fumigation, and I'll also touch on multi-year field trial research we've established to examine the performance of telone and chloropicrin.
And Christy, can you give us a little bit of reasoning behind why you guys think that this subject is really important for people in the tree nut industry? You know, how big of a problem is nematode management? How important really is this information there?
Yes. So I would say it's definitely important for growers to really be aware of what nematode pests that can cause severe damage to their orchard. Because for growers to make key management decisions, it's really critical to know what plant parasitic nematodes are present and their relative population densities, which leads into what control measures can take place. For pre-treatment control, especially for replant orchards, soil fumigation is the standard management tool for growers to really help reduce nematode populations to a level where serious crop damage will not result.
I'm curious, in your presentation, will you maybe be talking about having growers consider doing lab testing to see which species of nematode is in their fields there? Is that an important aspect?
Oh, yes. So in my talk, as I discuss kind of the importance of how to diagnose a nematode issue in the field, I always focus on four key factors. Looking at foliar, root symptoms, but also looking at the field history can definitely provide some valuable clues into what plant parasitic nematodes are present. But to really confirm the presence of plant parasitic nematodes and their pressure within your fields, it's very important for growers to soil sample as well as root sample and send those samples off to a diagnostics lab to confirm exactly what you have in your field. Because from there, growers can definitely make some really good key management decisions on where to go for their field.
Good points there. And for anyone listening, you'll get to hear a lot more about that from Christy at this year's Tree Nut Conference at the Tulare Fairgrounds on November 3rd. Christy, we're looking forward to having you there. And
me too.
We'll see you in November. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
We're here today with Ken Shackle, UC Davis Professor of Pomology. Ken will be attending this year's California Tree Nut Conference on November 3rd in Tulare, and he'll be part of our irrigation panel talking about irrigation technology and automating monitoring systems in tree nut crops. Ken, it's to my understanding that as part of your role on the panel, you'll be talking about pressure bombs a fair amount. Can you kind of explain what you'll be talking about there?
Well, I'm always talking about pressure bombs, so that's not going to be a surprise. I think actually more than just talking about pressure bombs, I'm going to talk about why it's important to ask the plant whether it needs water. Some people use pressure bombs, but we also have some new technologies that are looking very promising to do that in an automated way.
You'll also be bringing up some of these new technologies about monitoring water from certain companies like Satura, FloraPulse. Can you kind of explain maybe what those technologies are and how you'll be referencing them in your talk?
Sure. Maybe as a little bit of a preamble, what we are finding with the pressure bomb is that it's a good idea even to measure it every day. A lot of people think about just measuring once a week or something, but at least in the conditions where we've checked, we've got the trees doing some they're very busy out there. Let me just put it that way. And things change from day to day, and the trees can change pretty quickly. So we've been finding that the closer you track it on a daily, you know, the closer you get to daily values, the more information you're getting from your trees. And so that's why these automated methods like the Saturis and the microtensiometer from FloraPulse they're giving you 24/7 data, basically. The Saturis, both of them look like they're sort of the same thing, but they're actually quite different technologies. Then the Saturis is a little bit more temperature sensitive than the FloraPulse. So as a result, the Saturis only gives you one value every day because they have to kind of average over temperature conditions. And that's valuable. But it hasn't worked out very well in almonds this year. So I'm not going to talk too much about that one. The FloraPulse has worked really well this year. It seems to work pretty well in almonds and prunes and maybe other prunus species. Neither one can measure in walnuts yet, which is very unfortunate because we're very interested in walnuts. But there's a wounding response that walnuts have that get in the way of all of these sensors. So that's going to be a problem we have to solve in the future. But basically, the 24/7 data from the FluoroPulse really gives you a clear idea about how well they're recovering at night, and then when they dip down during the day, how much stress they are in. And you can see immediately when you irrigate, they recover. And so those are some big advantages of those technologies. And I think the more we look at what's going on day to day and even during the day, the more we're going to appreciate what these trees are doing for us.
Yeah, and I actually had a chance to talk to someone from Ceteris about this specific technology previously. It's just kind of a little sensor that sticks right into the tree. I'm curious, Ken, from your perspective, having looked at these technologies and pressure bombs, are these technologies that would be used in tandem with pressure bombs, or are they looking to replace pressure bombs?
Okay, that's a good question. They're basically looking to replace pressure bombs. And even though I've been a big proponent of pressure bombing, I'll be the first one to throw my bombs away if these things are reliable. The issue is that there's a lot going on there. The bomb is proven very reliable. And, you know, when I make a measurement, I have some confidence that that's the number that the tree's telling me. And so these sensors, we've been checking out the FluoroPulse one every day, pretty much, and hasn't always agreed, but it's on average, they're really close. So now I'm starting to wonder whether it's the pressure bomb that's not quite right, or which one is the better one. All of these sensors can really tell when a tree is really stressed, but then you can usually see that. So that's not particularly useful information. I mean, we don't let the trees get too stressed unless we're harvesting them, and then we know they're getting stressed. But basically, if these things work, they'll replace the pressure bomb. And of course, the downside of that is that all you're looking at is one tree. Whereas the pressure chamber, you can go around and, you know, you can measure different trees. But then some people find out if they measure different trees, they're all pretty similar. Maybe the ones that are suffering are clearly suffering, and there's no reason to irrigate everything by that tree. You want to irrigate every by the normal tree. So that's a big question about how much variability is really important. So if you can find a typical tree and you can plug it into one of these sensors, we found that it can do really well in most cases.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing more about these sensors and anything about the pressure bomb in your panel on November 3rd. Ken, I want to thank you in advance for being a part of this panel, and thank you today for coming and talking with me about what you will be discussing on that panel. We appreciate having you on today.
Happy to talk with you, Taylor.
This is Taylor with My Ag Life, signing off.
VetriNet Conference is next Wednesday, November 3rd, in Tulare. You can find more information at myaglife.com. Our news brief is coming up next. We will be right back.
Network with the top tier of the industry at this year's California TreeNet Conference, featuring presentations from the top executives from CDFA and California's tree nut commodity boards. Register at WCNGG.com, and we'll see you in Tulare on November 3rd at the California Tree Nut Conference. The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow. Does your crop have iron chlorosis? AgroPlantae has a solution for you. Traditionally, chelated iron has limitations that Agroplantase Iron Force does not. Iron Force, with its EDDHA chelation technology, can turn your plant's iron chlorosis from yellow to green in as little as 15 days, despite unbalanced soil pH and calcareous soils. From organic certified to conventional micronutrients, Agroplante has the product for you. Call 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplante.com.
Welcome back. Here's your news for today. USDA's latest look at fall fruit and tree nut production indicates varying forecast numbers depending on the commodity. Rod Bain reports.
Your snack bowl might be mixed in proportion, depending on what kind of fall fruits and tree nuts you have in it. That is due in part to a mixed forecast from USDA regarding fall fruits and tree nuts. So say you like palm fruit, apples, and pears. USDA research economist Jacqueline Kramer says for apples,
apple harvest will be up 3% this season.
The nation's largest apple producer, Washington State, is expecting a 7% increase in its crop this year. However,
Washington has experienced extremely high temperatures,
which could reduce final yield totals. Pears, meanwhile, are expected to produce similar totals this year as in 2020. Washington State numbers are expected to be down 19%, while Oregon and California pear totals are expected to be up, despite several challenges this growing season.
It was reported that the drought in California had affected pear production. It was also reported that earlier in the year, freeze damage, and some growers reported some stink bug damage in Oregon.
If you enjoy table grapes, even with the significant drought conditions in California and Washington State,
table grape production is estimated to be up this year.
Up 8% from 2020. Total U.S. grape production is also expected to increase year over year by 9%. Kramer adds,
we're still kind of watching to see what will happen
with final production numbers as drought continues out west and California's table grape harvest continues well into December. Turning to peaches, domestic production could reach its highest total in 4 years, expected up 13% year over year. Kramer says despite drought and high temperatures, the Golden State's Freestone crop is
expected up 23%.
Plus, increased peach production forecasted for South Carolina and Georgia. Meanwhile, how is California's extended drought impacting tree nut production?
Almond and walnut production has been forecast by NAS to be down.
With almond production forecasted down 10% from last season's record high total, and walnut production 15% lower from the previous season. The decline in almond production is drought-related.
There's been reports of growers possibly pulling out the trees due to a lack of water, and yields are expected to be down.
However, lower walnut production is primarily attributed to another weather condition.
And freeze had a big impact on the walnut production and caused frost damage, which is expected to decrease walnut harvest this season.
While production of other mixed nuts, such as hazelnut, pistachios, and macadamias are expected to be a mixed bag. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The House Agriculture Subcommittee on Biotechnology, Horticulture, and Research held a hearing on Tuesday to examine applications and advancements in biotechnology. Fan LeChu is Vice President of Scientific Affairs and Policy with the American Seed Trade Association. She talked about a new frontier in biotech, foods that stay fresher longer, like non-browning potatoes.
So for potatoes, it was there's studies that demonstrate if we can just have non-browning potatoes, we will save 1.5 billion pounds of potatoes a year. That's a lot of French fries. So I think if you take that across apples and lettuce, just think about all the lettuce we throw away when it gets brown and we don't finish it by the end of the week. It's a lot. And that's just in our kitchens.
She pointed out that biotechnology is much broader than just herbicide-tolerant traits in traditional crops like corn, cotton, and soybeans.
We're talking about nutrition. We're talking about water usage. We're talking about things that would allow us to use less inputs. So I think we have to think broadly and not think about how we use agricultural biotechnology, the 20th century agricultural biotechnology, but thinking more ahead in the 21st century. As we're learning more about plants, we're getting more precise about how we are doing things. And I think that creates a lot of opportunities. So at ASTA, we actually have a website called Innovature that talks about food. It doesn't talk about agriculture, it talks about food and how plant breeding impacts our lives, both from an environmental perspective, but a health perspective. So I really encourage you all to take a look at that because it's very appealing for those. I did not start in ag, so I think it's targeted at folks that are not in ag, which really need to understand and appreciate all the efforts we all put into agriculture.
We will have more from the hearing in tomorrow's show. Meanwhile, Mexico is banning genetically modified corn for human consumption. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack recently hosted his Mexican counterpart during a trip to Iowa. Vilsack says they addressed the topic.
It doesn't prohibit or prevent the U.S. GE corn from coming into the country for the feed that they need. And there's not going to be a restriction based on whether or not the corn is GMO or not. Now, we're going to make sure that promise that he's made is actually carried through on the ground, but certainly reassuring to me that the secretary understands the necessity of keeping that trade route open to our corn.
Last year, 25% of all U.S. corn exports went to Mexico, worth about $2.5 billion. USDA has a new initiative to help reduce problems with salmonella contamination in poultry production from farm to kitchen. Gary Crawford has more.
Here is a question revolving around salmonella contamination levels of poultry products versus salmonella infections, illnesses in humans connected to poultry products. A question that has been daunting health officials, poultry producers, and poultry processors for quite some time.
How is it that we have contamination levels falling and no measurable change in infections?
And what can we do to reduce those infections? Deputy Undersecretary of Agriculture for Food Safety Sandra Eskin says they've been trying to answer that question for years, tweaking the rules here and there, making little changes. But now, Eskin says, USDA is launching an all-out effort to find answers and solutions that will bring down salmonella-related illnesses by looking at every point in the food chain from the farm to the table. However, she does say most salmonella contamination comes in with the birds at the processing plant. Of course,
there are many, many interventions that are used by many growers and many companies. These include things like vaccines, probiotics and prebiotics, some pretty straightforward common sense measures like clean food, clean water, clean bedding for the birds. So what we want to examine is how we can encourage those farmers, those growers to use these measures.
USDA has no authority to make growers do that.
But we do know there are ways that we can perhaps incentivize growers, farmers, companies, to put these measures in place. The goal is to get less contamination entering the slaughterhouse.
But Eskin says, to be clear, that's just one of dozens of things that will be looked at. USDA will be examining every step in the poultry food chain from farm to table, looking at old data, looking at what we already know about this problem.
But we also know that there are many gaps in what we know.
So there will likely be new research done on this situation. Perhaps some innovations will come out of it. Eskin is hoping for positive results from this new initiative within about 2 years. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
A local infestation of the glassy-winged sharpshooter was found in a residential area of Vacaville in Solano County. The pest is primarily a threat to grapevines because it can spread a fatal bacterium that causes Pierce's disease for grapes. However, the pest and disease can also impact susceptible types of citrus crops. 5 adult glassy-winged sharpshooters were found October 1st in traps set as part of a broad array designed specifically to detect this pest throughout areas of the state that are not already infested. Additional traps have since been deployed at a higher density near those 2 initial detection sites. They have found approximately another 35. Visual surveys of plant material in the area have also detected egg masses in the same neighborhood. No sharpshooters or egg masses have been detected outside the immediate area. Working with the Solano County Agricultural Commissioner's Office and others in the region, the California Department of Food and Agriculture is continuing to survey the area, also to inform local growers and the broader community, and to develop appropriate next steps to eradicate the infestation. The pace of winter wheat planting is close to average, though still behind last year's pace. Stephanie Ho reports.
The planting pace for the nation's winter wheat crop remains very close to the average.
In fact, identical, 80% is the planted number for October 24th. That matches the five-year average. 4 points behind last year, however, 84% on October 24th, 2020.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
And so we have seen numbers picking up in some of the drier areas, including the interior northwest, the northern plains, and parts of the southern plains that had been trending dry. With that later and quick planting at the tail end of the season, we're still seeing our emergence numbers a bit behind schedule. 55% of the crop emerged by October 24th.
With the first look at winter wheat condition,
it does tell a tale of continuing dryness or concerning dryness in some areas. Fortunately, some of that dryness is being relieved as we speak, and so hopefully these conditions will start to turn around. But as we start the season, only 46% of the crop rated good to excellent, 20% very poor to poor.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
After a year of canceled and or virtual conferences and conventions, the Potato Expo will be back live on January 5th and 6th in Anaheim, right across the street from Disneyland. National Potato Council's Holly Alexander says people seem excited to meet up again.
Registration's going great. We have a full trade show full of exhibitors who have signed up to come back this year. We're making more and more announcements each week that can be found on our website,
which is www.nationalpotatocouncil.org/potato-expo. Alexander says this year's location is perfect for the Potato Expo.
The numbers look great. Anaheim's going to be a great setting for everybody to come back together, to enjoy the sunshine, enjoy the space, enjoy seeing each other once again.
NPC CEO Cam Quarles seconds that.
The Anaheim Convention Center is kind of the perfect facility for us to do this, where we're going to have the hotel as well as the expo. Very close proximity. The space indoors is terrific.
And if you haven't done so yet, Alexander says now is the time to register.
On November 5th, we have a registration increase. So for anybody looking, you know, if you already know that you're going to go, so get signed up by November 5th and get a discount.
Again, the 2022 Potato Expo is January 5th and 6th in Anaheim. That's your news for today. We have another look at the upcoming TreeNet conference when we come back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
We're talking with Jason Scott, CEO and publisher of West Coast Nut Magazine and JCS Marketing Incorporated, about the upcoming California Tree Nut Conference on November 3rd. This conference will bring growers together with industry leaders from across all the nut commodities and also provide valuable continuing education credits on important production practices. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Taylor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's great to be back for another conference this year. Jason, I want to ask you first off, you know, let's talk about the tree nut industry leaders and executives who will be participating in the conference panel on the state and future of the industry. Can you tell us who will be joining the conference for that? And what can you tell us about this really rare opportunity for the industry?
Yeah, so we're excited. We've invited back all the industry tree nut leader executives to join us on a panel. And so we have Richard Waycott, who is the executive for the California Almond Board. And then we have Michelle Connolly, who is the executive for the walnut industry. Richard Matoyan, who is the executive for the American Pistachio Growers Association, and Mark Hendrickson, who is in charge of California Pecan Growers Association. So we're bringing all the top executives together and doing something that is original and unique in our industry, is we're bringing them all under one roof at the same time, and we're asking them questions together on this kind of united front with an audience of mixed industry professionals from all the different commodities I just mentioned. And so really unique opportunity to see kind of the movers and shakers in one place, have a chance to see me ask questions, have a chance as a grower or as a industry professional crop consultant to ask them questions as well in a live session. And so we're really excited about that. And I think that's something unique that this conference provides that you can't get anywhere else.
Definitely. And I'm sure there's also going to be opportunities at some point while they're present at the conference for growers to network with those executives as well.
Absolutely. We have a large trade show, which they'll be around. They'll stick around. So for a time, so you should be able to catch them throughout the day and during the event.
Jason, another important guest that I wanted to bring up that will be present at the conference is California Secretary of Agriculture, Karen Ross, and she'll kind of be talking about the California Department of Food and Agriculture's priorities for the tree nut industry. How substantial is it to have Karen Ross at this conference?
We feel like it's pretty important and a substantial opportunity for us to hear from our state leadership and, have a chance to kind of ask her the hard questions and to see where her mind's at. And so I would encourage everybody in the California tree nut industry to attend this conference, because it gives you a good perspective of how the state sees some of the key topics that we're facing as an industry. And I think that's invaluable as the publisher of West Coast Nut, and a fabulous opportunity, and want to just really encourage folks between Karen and the executives. This is really a top-down meeting. And so if you're a mover and shaker in the industry you want to know what's happening and you want to be part of the process and part of the decisions, this is where Tree Nut Ag Insiders meet in November to discuss top issues for the tree nut industry.
Jason, the tree nut industry has seen an interesting course of events over the last year, some encouraging and some quite tumultuous, I would say. How do you really see the state of the tree nut industry currently as, COVID's starting to wind down here? And how can conferences like these improve it for the future?
Well, Taylor, if I had a dime for every time I was asked to pull out my magic crystal ball on the tree nut industry, I would be able to retire by now. When I got into this industry over 15 years ago, we thought that we hit a glass ceiling and that the tree nut industry was going to, the bubble was going to burst. Here I am 15 years later. We're still growing globally as a tree nut industry in California. Product is able to be dispensed all over the world. It's a very portable product. So it's got a lot of versatility, a good shelf life. So I think really the sky's the limits for the tree nut industry. you're right. We have seen some peaks and valleys. You know, water continues to be a big issue for us, one of the main issues, which we will be covering at the conference on how to better address our water situation with being better stewards of irrigation. But I don't think by any means, I mean, every time I turn around, I hear stories about new acres going in, growers continuing to choose tree nut commodities as their go-to crop for their farms. And so I still think there's a lot of potential. We're seeing a lot of growth in the pistachio industry currently. You know, we've got a lot of work to do on prices for all the commodities, but I think we still have some great days ahead of us if we can figure this water thing out and we can become better stewards about how we manage our orchards and be more effective in our timing and in our planning and in our execution of chemicals, fertilizers, and irrigation. Yeah. By utilizing technologies, by the way, technology is it's the future of our industry. It's where we need to go next. It's how we're going to be able to survive this new world of regulations and difficult as we make difficult farming decisions. So technology is a big part of the future of California agriculture, and just another reason to come to the show and network with all these great companies that are going to have new technologies and innovations on the trade show floor. And they have important information and expertise that they can help you with in making critical decisions for your orchards.
I would 100% agree with that sentiment about technology, specifically that within precision agriculture. And just like you said, a lot of those companies that will be present at the trade show will be showcasing some of their technologies or programs or software, or whatever that have to deal with precision agriculture really is the future of the industry. So thank you for bringing that up. I want to get your take on this though. You know, how beneficial is it to have all of the major nut crops represented, walnuts, almonds, pistachios, pecans?
Well, I think at the top of my mind, when you ask that question, I really think that this is a unique opportunity. Number one, it's a unique opportunity to see us together as an industry, to see what's in common, to learn from each other. Obviously, you know, not everything for every tree nut is the same. We have our own unique aspects of growing, but we have a lot in common. And I think bringing those commonalities to the table and learning from each other and driving from what's worked, what hasn't, is valuable to us as an industry. And so being able to come together, and a lot of our growers that and subscribers at West Coast Nut are diversified growers. These are growers that have acres of almonds, walnuts, and pistachios in their utility belt of crops that they manage and they have stewardships over. And so being able to come as a diversified grower and to hear from all the leaders is a key opportunity throughout the year and a unique one that they won't get anywhere else. So I think it's really critical that if you're in the tree nut industry, that you come to this conference, that you learn more about your own commodity and you learn about the other commodities, because maybe you're an almond grower today, but maybe tomorrow you want to diversify with another tree nut crop.
Definitely. I like that there. And there's a lot of incentives you know, to come to this conference, not only learning about all the major nut commodities, you're getting the continuing education credits as well. It's also free to attend, which is a big one. So a lot of reasons to come to the conference there, Jason.
Yeah, it's a great venue. It grows every year. If you're in the industry, you know, you need to join the, we're closing in probably 1,000 attendees. So it's a great opportunity to join other ag professionals. The trade show grows every year. We have a free industry lunch. The event itself is free. You're right. We are jam-packed of great information and education. plenty of people to network with. And so really, if you're in the tree nut industry, there's no excuses. The only place to be on November 3rd is the California Tree Nut Conference in Tulare. So look forward to seeing you there. Look forward to seeing all my friends and growers and crop consultants, and looking forward to having another year together and moving the industry forward.
Definitely. Well, Jason, one thing we haven't covered yet, and our agenda is about to go out, we've talked about some of the panels already, is what some of the featured panels will be at the conference. We talked about the ones with the executives and the one with Karen Ross on it, but can you tell us a little bit about some of the other panels that will be available to growers at the conference?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start out with, we've got the, like I mentioned earlier, we've got an irrigation technology and automating seminar going on for monitoring systems and tree crops. We have a great talk on nematode and how to manage that in tree nut crops. We will have a new technologies talk for monitoring and managing insect pests. And then during our break and trade show, we'll have a post-harvest nutrition demonstration and other demonstrations and information for chemicals, fertilizers, irrigation technologies, new varieties. So there'll be a huge variety of vendors to network with and to get information that will have demonstrations on hand. There'll be prizes, there'll be food, beverages. So just a great opportunity to learn something new and to hear about critical information for our industry.
Well, Jason, that about wraps it up, but I just want to ask you one more thing. You know, is there anything else that you can think of off the top of your head that growers can look forward to with this conference?
I think we pretty much covered it. The doors open at 7 a.m. So be there early, so you have plenty of time to network and to see old friends. So the doors open at 7 a.m. You can register at our website at wcngg.com. And then you'll go to the California Tree Nut Conference and you can register, let us know so we know you're coming and we can plan for you for our industry lunch. Just want to encourage everybody, all my subscribers to attend, make it a day. We'll have, if you go online, we'll have a host hotel if you're traveling, that you could stay over. And so we'll make it really, really as painless and as easy as possible for you to attend this event and have a great time. So make sure that you go to our website. Again, that's wcngg.com, and register today and join other Ag Insiders for this must attend conference.
Perfect. And Jason, will you remind us where the conference is taking place this year?
Yes, California Tree Nut Conference is in Tulare, California, at the Tulare County Fairgrounds. And if you go online, you can see the exact address. And make sure you download the MyAgLife app for all your updates, and so you can stay in the know and you get all the information you need for this conference. You can download the app on any mobile device, whether you have an app an Apple or a PC so the app's good for just about any mobile device that folks own these days.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you, Jason, for coming on and informing us about the conference this year. It should be a great one, and we look forward to seeing everyone there on November 3rd in Tulare.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. This is Taylor with MyAgLife signing off.
That TreeNut Conference is next Wednesday, November 3rd in Tulare. You can find more information at myaglife.com. We'll be right back.
Agrimiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agrimiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgriMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock RootPack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Welcome back. Last week, Vice President Kamala Harris visited Lake Mead in Nevada. After hearing about drought and climate issues, she and other lawmakers made remarks on the Biden administration's Build Back Better agenda, and specifically about water. The remarks start with Representative Dina Titus of Nevada.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to the Department of Interior and its great representatives who work on this. I'm so honored to be able to show the natural beauty, but also the results of climate change to our Vice President. Thank you so much for being here. You know, several things are going on at once. We're in the fastest growing cities in the country. We have about 2.25 million people and 40 million visitors. We're also the warmest community in the country. And third, we have the smallest allocation of water from the Colorado River. Nonetheless, we have been great stewards and we have reduced our consumption by 45%, but it's going down, down, down even further. And that's why the provisions that address water conservation and climate change generally that are in the Build Back Better bill and the infrastructure bill are so critical. This is our moment. You hear the existential argument. Look around at this bathtub ring. It's very clear. So thank you, Madam Vice President, for being here and taking this message back to Washington.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Stephen Horsford, and I'm proud to represent Nevada's 4th District and to join with my colleagues to welcome the Vice President back to Nevada and to be able to show her firsthand the effects of the drought and the implications of climate change. You know, growing up here in Las Vegas, I've had the opportunity to enjoy Lake Mead as a kid growing up. And now as an adult, bringing my own children out here to fish this summer, I was sharing that with the Vice President. But we have built a desert in the middle. We have built an oasis in the middle of a desert, and Las Vegas really has relied on the water from Lake Mead that unfortunately has dropped considerably over the last decades because of the effects of climate change. And that is why we support and we know Congress must act to pass both the bipartisan infrastructure bill as well as the Build Back Better Act and its provisions to protect and address the needs of our environment and climate change. So we look forward to continuing to work with your leadership, Madam Vice President, and of course the President, and thank you for taking the time to come and see this firsthand and working with our entire delegation in Nevada. Climate change is not a partisan issue. This is an issue that Democrats, Republicans, and Independents understand must be addressed. And now is the time for us to act. So thank you, Madam Vice President, and I'll turn it over to Congresswoman Susie Lee.
Good afternoon. It is my honor to welcome the Vice President to Congressional District 3 on the shores of Lake Mead. For 86 years, Lake Mead has provided the true promise that it is to our community. Not only is it our recreation outlet for many, not just Nevadans, but tourists from across the world, it also is a source of hydropower and a source of our water. And water is life. And when we look at Lake Mead, it represents the lifeblood of this community. And that's why the steps that all of the incredible staff that gave us briefings today doing on conservation have been so incredibly important. But the work that we are doing in Congress, led by the Vice President and President, with the bipartisan infrastructure package, which includes my water recycling bill, which will mean that we reserve water for thousands of families in Southern Nevada for years to come. But not only that, the Build Back Better agenda will take on climate change head on. And ultimately, when we look to the future, that's the type of leadership we need. And so I am proud to work alongside this administration to, you know, we say climate change is not tomorrow, it's today. And when you look at the ring here in Lake Mead, we all understand far too well what it means. And so with that, it's my honor to introduce Madam Vice President Kamala Harris.
Congresswoman Titus, thank you for the warm welcome and for your many years of leadership on this issue in the United States Congress. Congressman Horsford, you so eloquently talked about the intergenerational impact of this issue and will continue to be an intergenerational impact, and I've spent time with you in your district and know of your longstanding leadership on this issue even before you entered Congress. And Congresswoman Lee, thank you for the warm welcome to your district and for your leadership and the invitation to join you here today. So this is a fundamental issue, which is the issue of water, literally the issue of water. As the Congress members have mentioned, every living thing depends and requires on water and its existence and its prevalence. And what we are seeing in this nation and around the world is that this climate crisis, fueled by, in many, if not most ways, by human behaviors, has resulted in the moment where we're looking at this beautiful American landmark, the product of a lot of thought over generations about how we can supply, in particular, the states of Nevada, Arizona, California, and including Mexico, with the water that 25 million people rely on. This is such a fundamental issue. And so when we talk about the Build Back Better agenda, it is an agenda. Let's break it down. What is Build Back Better? What is the Build Back Better agenda? It's about climate. It's about families. And it's about jobs. And it's about health. And all of these issues are present when we look at the issues that are impacting Lake Mead as an example of what is happening around the country. Not to mention the fact that right now, all the western states, 90% of the western states are facing some level of drought. So when we look at what's happening here, we know this is about this lake, but it is about a region and it is about our nation. The Build Back Better agenda is thoughtful and foresightful, and it really is transformational in the way it will address these issues. So on the issue of the drought, the infrastructure, the bipartisan infrastructure deal, combined with the Build Back Better agenda, is about what we need to do to invest in things like water recycling and reuse, what we can do in terms of water desalination, what we can do in terms of implementation of drought contingency plans. This is about thinking ahead, recognizing where we are and where we're headed. If we don't address these issues with a sense of urgency, understanding this is literally about life. On the issue of jobs, the bipartisan infrastructure deal, as was mentioned during our tour, will be about good union jobs. The work that needs to be done to help us build up resiliency, adaptation, and also combat the climate crisis.
That's about the jobs that are about pipe fitters, electricians, plumbers. These are good union jobs that are about restoring our basic infrastructure upon which we rely for these fundamental needs. On the issue of climate, well, the Build Back Better agenda will help us tackle the climate crisis with investments in clean energy and electric vehicles. And so we can reduce emissions. And why do we need to reduce emissions? Because that is part of what is contributing to these drought conditions. So this is the work that we are talking about with these two bills that are before Congress. And it is critical that we as a nation understand that we have within our hands, within our possession, the ability to actually change the course of where we're headed. Just look out at this lake. Look at where the water has receded over just the last 20 years. That space is larger than the height of the Statue of Liberty in just the last 20 years. This is where we're headed. So let's take on a sense of responsibility with a sense of urgency and do something about this in a way that is about satisfying basic needs, which in this case right here is 25 million people who are served by what happens at Lake Mead, not to mention what we can do that is about future generations. So let's get these bills passed. Let's understand that right now we have a moment where we have the ability to actually benefit future generations and be transformational in a way that will not only be about life, but about this beautiful planet and beautiful places like Lake Mead. Thank you all.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.